courtrooms, like football fields, are stages for transformation. At times, opposing sides clash over principle. Otherwise, they fight for profit. There are good guys and there are bad guys, umpires and cheerleaders. At the conclusion of such contests, we hardly even recognize the players for all the accusations and the revelations. Hello, and welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally, your host for Beyond the Book. Writing about what he calls the O.J. Simpson of copyright trials, Jeff Roberts recounts in The Battle for the Books a nearly decade-long contest pitting East Coast against West Coast, Manhattan Island versus Silicon Valley, technology upstarts taking on publishing elites. The battle for the books inside Google's gambit to create the world's biggest library reminds us of the titan-like ambitions and the ensuing legal Donnybrook on a global scale among authors, publishers, librarians, and academics. It ends on a world utterly changed and forever, and in ways unforeseeable to the parties when they began their war. Jeff Roberts joins me now from New York. Jeff, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Hi, Chris. Nice to be here.
Well, we're delighted you have a chance to join us today, and we should tell people, Jeff, that you are covering legal and media news for Paid Content and GigaOM, and prior to working at Paid Content, you reported for Reuters in Paris and New York. Jeff Roberts studied law at McGill University in Montreal, clerked at the federal court, and has passed the bar in New York and Ontario, so well-qualified indeed to tell us about this remarkable legal battle. And I suppose one way to give people a sense of the size of this case, the original code name that Google gave what became known as the Library Project was codename Ocean. Why don't you tell us about the very first days of this?
The Google guys have always been very ambitious. You don't go out to start Google and index the world's information unless you're not super ambitious. And since in their grad student days, they worked in the library with helping digitization process, I think it soon occurred to them, hey, let's digitize everything. And at the time, I think it's important to know there were scanning projects, but librarians I've talked to said the pace they were going would have taken them more than 1,000 years. So then the Google guys looked about and just decided to do it all. And this would have been more than 10 years ago when they were still grad students and Google was still coming together.
Right, and it was as natural to them to think about it in these terms as saying that it would be better to get, as you put it, your image was a striking one for me, to get your water from a faucet rather than from a well. I mean, to them, struggling with finding books in library stacks was really very much part of the old world, and they lived in the new world.
Exactly. There's sort of this, some call almost radical Silicon Valley visions to many people. I mean, we cherish libraries and books, but I think increasingly, even to me and others, the idea of going to the stacks it's starting to seem a bit archaic, especially when we've had databases at our fingertips. But for these guys, I think they've always thought this way, and they sort of saw the future this way even more than 10 years ago.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned in my introduction about the ways that things have changed over the 10 years since this all began, or more than 10 years, and reminding people that in 2002, Google was not yet a public company. It was still very much in a battle for top space in the search engine category with Yahoo. Think about how much has changed since then, of course. Initially, when they began approaching the Google founders, as well as their technicians, began approaching the libraries and librarians for their books, this particular project was seen as something of a blessing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think because Google at that time wasn't a very intimidating company. If people had heard of them, they thought they were kind of neat. And also, this looked like a great way to push your digitization efforts forward. But then things sort of spun a lot bigger and very quickly.
Right. And I think that's the story that you recount in the book, the ways that Google itself has changed over time, the ways that our conception of libraries and books have changed. And in particular, though, the transformation of Google is really striking. They went from being that kind of cute little upstart, kind of quirky, but sort of a blessing to us all by providing us with those great search results. And that was in 2002, before they went public. By the time that the lawsuit that's a question here in the book was first brought to court in 2005, something had begun to change. And what was that?
Well, I think just the scale of Google, people started realizing what it could do. And I think some people became very afraid of it, too. It's an enormous company that wants to know everything. And at the same time, I think the book industry was sort of being turned on its head. So it's sort of a confluence of hopes and fears, and people just getting accustomed to this radical new technology.
You have a wonderful way with a phrase, and you know, as you described this collective fear about Google, it was really sort of, you know, displacing their own fears about everybody's fears, authors, publishers, librarians, the public's fears about the digital future, displacing them onto Google itself.
Yeah, and I think anytime there's a technology or company of such import, it's going to be met with mixed feelings. I mean, I think when cars first started appearing on the roads, I don't think everyone loved them. I think they probably made a lot of people afraid of the sort of radical mechanized future, same with assembly lines and so on, because when things like this come along, they facilitate new conveniences, but they also displace ways of life. And sometimes some very, you know, kind of cherished ways of life. So I think Google this time around that's what's happening.
Right. And, you know, Google made an effort throughout the very early days of this project, as you tell us in the book, to fly under the radar. They have a kind of a preoccupation with secrecy, and they must have been aware that this was ultimately going to lead them to a challenge in the courtroom over copyright infringement. Tell us more about that, how they tried to stay under the radar, and then how they responded once the case came to court.
Well, it was certainly bold. I mean, I know Canaletta said they were taken by surprise having the lawsuit. I'm pretty sure they saw it coming all along. But what they did was rather shrewd. They just cooperated with these libraries, kept a bunch of non-disclosure agreements so no one really knew what they were doing, and then suddenly emerged with this sort of fait accompli. It's like, oh, look what we've done. And that, I think, is what really alarmed a lot of people, both because they didn't understand what was happening, because it did seem a sort of affront to traditional respect, to sort of, you know, literary control, and just the sheer scale of it. So they presented it, and then all of a sudden it looked like this is what was going to happen. And then they met some pretty ferocious opposition.
Well, indeed, and this dichotomy, this sort of Super Bowl, if you will, between publishing and the East Coast, the Manhattan elites, and I'll put that in quotes, against the West Coast and Silicon Valley and Stanford University smart kids and all of that whiz kids, it really kind of brought out the best and the worst in publishing and technology.
Yeah, I would say so, because there's a lot of money and prestige and egos on the line. And you're right, that is sort of what it was. It was, you know, the kind of literary establishment of New York and Boston against the kind of radical whiz kids of Silicon Valley. And it's hard to discuss this without kind of putting a, a value judgment on it. In the sense that Silicon Valley can sound bad or old publishing elite can sound bad, but I think both sides' views were very legitimate. And I don't really sort of side with one over the other. I think they're both two immensely smart, prestigious sort of realms that came together in a very quickly and unexpected way.
Well, indeed, and we are talking right now with Jeff Roberts, the author of Battle for the Books, Inside Google's Gambit to Create the World's Biggest Library. He covers legal and media news for paid content and GigaOM. And Jeff, we don't want to recount the whole case itself. We've done that here on Beyond the Book over time since the very beginning of the lawsuit in 2005 and the announcement of the settlement in 2008. And one could make a wisecrack about this particular case. When is a settlement not a settlement? When it's the Google bookcase settlement. Very briefly, describe for us what it was that essentially blew the settlement apart.
I think it's, as Judge Chin said, they sort of crafted a forward-looking business arrangement, because the principles of class action law, you're supposed to kind of make good for a past harm and not to kind of bind the future with your contract. But the settlement itself was extraordinarily clever. And I mean, to be honest, I think it might have advanced e-publishing a lot more than where it is now if it had gone into effect. And it's also an irony how quickly things change in technology. When's the last time you hear about Google being a monster in the publishing space? You know, in the interim, Amazon has completely taken over and dominated. So this fears of Google controlling every ebook just almost seems sort of novel at this point.
Well, indeed. And, you know, that's the fascinating part. As I read the book, Jeff, I was reminded of the ways that, rather like a football game, you know, the tide can turn and can turn in multiple ways throughout the course of four quarters. So you know, by 2011, the tide has turned again. And Google is in a far different position, not only from where it was in 2002, but from where it was in 2005 or even 2008. I wonder if you could sort of talk about your perception of Google's, if they weren't surprised by the lawsuits, were they surprised by what happened to the settlement?
I think they were probably profoundly disappointed because, I mean, I think, again, when this is debated, there's such sort of acrimony, especially from publishers or tech people, but I think there was best intentions on both sides. Google, I think, thought they'd created something immensely useful. And I think it probably hurt them and surprised them to see how ferociously it was attacked. And also, I mean, for all it's portrayed as grassroots authors rebelling against monster Google, I mean, it was a very well-orchestrated corporate campaign put together by Amazon and Microsoft to sandbag the settlement.
I guess the point is that, as you mentioned, no one really sort of positions Google as in the publishing space any longer, but they are still scanning books, I understand.
Yes, at a sort of fairly modest pace at this point. And now I think the really intriguing question is they've scanned more than, I think, 20 million by now. What's going to happen to all those books? I mean, because we can decry Google for doing it, but the fact remains, I mean, there's a splendid corpus of information that's now being locked up. And I think some publishers have a bit of a dog in the manger attitude saying, well, if we can't have it, no one can have it. Whereas I think the original Google Book settlement would have really advanced the economy of digitizing that sort of that stack of knowledge and books.
Right. Well, it's fascinating because, as you mentioned in the book, the original ambition was to create a kind of second Library of Alexandria, only one that could not be burned to the ground. And so now that library may exist, but it can only be, you know, the books in it can only be viewed by, I suppose, a very small group of people at Mountain View.
Exactly. And so who's going to get it? I mean, I know there's a librarian at Harvard who's, I think, angling to get that whole corpus pushed into the Library of Congress, which might be a solution. But then again, I mean, Google might have a right to say, are we really obliged to become the world's philanthropists and make this donation? So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next. And then, of course, Google, I mean, their motive isn't, they never wanted to be a, you know, a book retailer. Their interest is, of course, the searching that goes on with the books. Google, all they care about what's in the search box, and the books people search for is of immense interest and value to Google. So that's their angle on it. But at the same time, they have created a sort of marvelous corpus of information that for now remains locked up, and I think some people could regard that as a shame.
Well, indeed, it's a fascinating irony. And Jeff Roberts, before we let you go, we'll just remind people that the case isn't over just yet. There are still litigation going on. There's still a court schedule in Judge Chin's courtroom.
Yeah, well, it's really funny. It's now part of it has gone up to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, on which Judge Chin now sits. He's not going to hear it, of course, but I think now, and meanwhile, the publishers and Google have made peace, and the Authors Guild is sort of out there on a limb holding Google's foot to the fire. But you know, for now, it just seems it's going to be tangled up in procedural snarls for at least another year, as far as I can see.
Right. Well, Jeff, as a lawyer and as a reporter, how do you feel about the way this has turned down in the end? Are you disappointed yourself? It sounds like the people in Mountain View are. Do you feel as if covering the digital publishing space, we have gotten a bit of a short stick here?
A little bit. I mean, I think part of the problem is that it's just the inability to access that splendid sort of pile of books. Wouldn't it be fun to search and all of that? And knowing it's just right there beyond our fingertips and we can't get it, that I think is a shame. And I think the sooner we can access that and discover it and find business models around it, the better. But for now, it's almost like time is on hold or the future is on hold while this sits in the courtroom.
Jeff Roberts is the author of The Battle for the Books, the inside story of Google's gambit to create the world's biggest library. Jeff, thanks again.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.